Welcome to Giants Double Play, the San Francisco Chronicle's podcast on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Janie Hu, the Chronicle's assistant sports editor, and I'm joined, as always, by our Giants beat writer, Henry Schulman. Henry, it's a pleasure having you in here again. It's two times in 2 weeks. We're starting off well here.
Yeah, I get to spend a little time in the Bay Area, which is nice.
That's true. All right. Last week, we went over the Giants' first half in our podcast, and we have posted your midseason report and embedded that podcast in there. So
right.
Our listeners should take a listen if you haven't already. So we're going to start off right now and just take a look at the second half.
Right. And the first half, the midseason report, which is on sfchronicle.com, is also accompanied by the unit by unit report. So you get my opinion on how the pitchings did, how the hitting did, how the defense did. And then again, like you just said, the podcast on the first half review is embedded on there. So you can just click on it and listen.
Sounds good. So we'll treat this podcast as our look ahead to the start of the second half. And the first, like right off the bat, they've got it. The Giants have a killer schedule to start.
Yeah. And I mean, in a way, it's actually good because the Giants will be able to gauge where they are, really. I mean, they really have been meandering around 500 all season. You got the trade deadline coming up. You have, you know, decisions to make. Now all of a sudden you get three games in Oakland against the A's, who are really hot. They're going to have to face Manaea again at the end of that series. The Giants traditionally don't play well there. Then they got two games in Seattle. You know, the Mariners are struggling a little bit, or have struggled toward the end of the first half, but they're still in a playoff position. And then they come home, and they got four games against the Brewers, who are the best team in the National League right now. And that'll take them right through the 29th of August, about the time that management has to decide, hey, what are we going to do at the trade deadline?
Right, right. You got August on your mind today. Well,
did
take
I
them
say
right
August?
Through the end of July.
I meant July, through the end of July. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get through to vacation time. I meant July.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, so the trade deadline looms July 31st.
1 p.m. our time.
All right, and of course, the question that every team's general manager gets asked, are you going to be a buyer or a seller come the trade deadline? And for the Giants, what can they do here?
Well, first of all, at the moment, as we tape this, as the second half begins, the Giants are in buy mode. They have to think that way. They are only four games out in the standings, even though there are four, you know, three teams ahead of them. You know, a couple of good weeks, and they could be in a playoff position themselves in this division. So they have to be in buy mode. But they're limited in what they can do, to be honest, because they are under... I guess they keep saying it's not a mandate, but a very strong suggestion from ownership that they stay within the $197 million luxury tax threshold, and they really don't have a lot of money within that. Now, that they traded Austin Jackson, when they traded Austin Jackson and Corey Guerin, they bought themselves about $2 million of wiggle room, but they could have been over it at that point. They won't say for sure. So they really do need to move some more money, and I mean, it could be a situation where they... tie a really good prospect to a veteran, you know, like Hunter Pence, for instance, just as one example, and lose some money there. And it's what they did with Austin Jackson. They could also, if they feel, for instance, that the bullpen is solid, and they, you know, have a little bit of wiggle room there, they could trade Sam Dyson, and that saves them $1.5 million for the rest of the year, just as one example.
Mm-hmm.
And if they put that money together with the money they saved on Austin Jackson, maybe go out and get a right-handed outfield bat, a rental. But they haven't decided yet whether they're going to go with a rental. They haven't decided yet exactly what they're going to do. The way Brian Sabian put it to me is that this could be a week-to-week, even series-to-series decision.
Right, depending, you're saying literally leading up to the trade deadline.
Exactly.
It can change day by day. So it sounds like it's going to be minor adjustments, though, that you can't. Can you foresee a situation where they're able to offload a lot of money in a deal that, you know, to kind of bring in a more expensive piece?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't look like they can. I don't know what kind of tricks they have up their sleeve. I mean, the hope was that Jeff Samardzija would come back and show he was healthy and, you know, make three really good starts. And then you could move him theoretically and save a whole lot of money there to a team that, you know, needed a starting pitcher more than the Giants did. Giants would have had to suck up a lot of the contract. I mean, $46 million left, but they can't do that now. I mean, he's on the disabled list. They really, when you're talking about big contracts with the Giants now, I mean, they could move McCutcheon, they probably would entertain moving McCutcheon at the All-Star break if they've decided that they really don't have a shot this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have to make a hard assessment by the end of July. And, you know, that's why these nine games are critical. I mean, if the Giants go 3-6 in these nine games and all of a sudden they're, you know, six back, they have to take a hard look at it. And then they can't really, you know, I mean, they have big contracts in Melanson. That's going to be a hard one to move. They got big contracts in Belt, big contract in Crawford. Do you want to move those? I don't think so. So that'll be tough.
Right. This might be kind of a strange question, but what's the overview of the level of prospects that the Giants have in their system right now to be able to maybe swing some of these deals and make it work? I know we talked at the beginning of the season about Elio Ramos being a chip, and he was just in the Futures game, correct?
Right. He actually got a single off the Giants pitching prospect, Sean Anderson.
Okay. But, I mean, where do they stack up? Do they have the pieces to be able to kind of swing some of these deals?
They have the pieces to swing a deal for a piece.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Giants were very forthright when they spent when they announced that they were going to spend a ton of money and restructure their farm system entirely, and I've written about that. And they were honest in saying that they just don't usually have the pieces to put together to make a huge deal to get one of those big, big impact players. Now, you know, as we're recording this, the Manny Machado deal to the Dodgers is kind of meandering along as the medicals are being done. But, you know, to trade a Manny Machado, a rental like that, they're going to get some, you know, pretty good pieces back from the Dodgers. And that's the kind of deal that the Giants really don't have the farm system to compete with right now. But they always have pieces that one team wants one way or another. Just as an example of this trade, we just talked about Jason Barr. I mean, that's a guy that most Giants fans couldn't pick out of a lineup as a prospect. He was their, I think, third-round pick or fifth-round pick last year. And the Rangers liked him so much, they took on $5 million in salary and Austin Jackson and Corey Guerin to get him. And there are players like that in the farm system. Ramos is one. Aramis Garcia, the catcher, is another. They have a second baseman in San Jose, Jalen Miller, who is a little bit of a late. He's 21 years old. He's in his second year at San Jose. Still a young guy. I mean, they have pieces that they can move to get maybe not the highest level free agents, but guys who could help them win.
Right. It's almost like you were bringing up the trade piece, Steve Barr. It's almost like real estate. You only need one buyer or
you
one person
need,
to agree to your
buyer,
price.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. All right. So included in your midseason report, Henry, you had listed your three hits and misses from the first half. Let's take a look at who, in your mind, needs to really step it up.
Well, one of my misses, was Evan Longoria, the third baseman. And, I think, as I wrote, he would be the first to tell you that he has not had the kind of year he would have liked to have had coming here from Tampa Bay in a very big trade. He hit in the 240s. He hit in the 280s against left-handed pitching, and they're lacking that now. So they need him in the lineup for that. He's committed more errors in the field than he's drawn walks. And I mean, the walks are not them in and of themselves. The number of walks is not an issue, but it does speak a little bit to his, what he's seeing at the plate, how he's adjusting, things like that. And I think he's one guy, who definitely needs to pick it up a little bit. A guy that doesn't get a lot of criticism for all he's done in the organization is Joe Panik. And really, he's had an unlucky year with injuries, with the groin injury that he's on the shelf for now, also the thumb tear that he had.
Right.
But he's a guy who's hitting, he's just not been hitting this year. And, he was the leadoff hitter at the start of the season. And the fact that they don't have a consistent leadoff hitter is a concern, and remains one, even with Steven Duggar's ascent. I don't know if these are guys that you would want to talk about stepping up, but these are key guys going forward are the two injured guys in the rotation. There's just no question about it. Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija. They have the depth to overcome some of though the injuries pick up some of those starts. We've seen it with Holland. We've seen it with they have Block in the bullpen. The two kids, obviously, Rodriguez and Suarez have done a yeoman's work.
Right.
But I mean, it's going to be hard to win if Johnny Cueto is whether he's hurt or too timid to throw the way he's supposed to throw. We got to give him some slack. It's only been two starts, and he has a partial tear of his UCL. But those are guys that. At least Cueto, especially Cueto, are going to have to pitch somewhat to their capabilities if the Giants are to go anywhere.
Remind me what both of those their contract situations are for Samardzija and Cueto.
Samardzija has 2 years left after this one. Cueto has 3 years left after this one. Now, Cueto signed a six-year deal with an opt-out after 2 years. And obviously, after he got hurt last year and put up some really bad numbers, he did not opt out.
Right,
so they still have...
Right.
A lot more years, and that's a little scary for guys who've had those kinds of injuries.
Right. So we're not looking at just what's going to take place in these next few months. This is a long term kind of how are these pitchers shaping up?
Yeah, and let me just talk about Cueto for a moment. I mean, Cueto has an injury that most generally ends up with Tommy John surgery, and he went to Dr. Andrews, who's the key physician who does Tommy John's and examines these elbows, and he said you can rehab this. And Dr. Andrews' opinion carried a lot of weight. I mean, Cueto was headed for Tommy John. The Giants medical staff was leaning toward Tommy John. He thought he was going to have it. But if he can't come back, if this thing is just not allowing him to pitch, and they decide to go ahead with the injury, mm-hmm. it would cost him the rest of this year and all of 2019.
Right.
But he's still signed for 2020 and 2021. So you have to look at the long term as well.
Right.
With Samardzija, they're saying that his shoulder injury is not something that surgery is not something they've talked about. But again, they might have to consider the long term since he has 2 years left and maybe shut him down for longer.
Right, right. All decisions they will not make lightly. Mm-hmm. For certain. What about, since we got on the topic of injuries, what's the the timetable for Joe Panik? Where is he at right now?
His prognosis was about 3 weeks, and he got hurt, I think, about a week and a half ago. So he's about halfway through. Actually, with him and Longoria, you could see both of them beginning minor league rehab assignments very soon after the All-Star break. I believe that Longoria's will start over the weekend. If not, then early next week, and they hope to have him back by right around August 1st. And Panik shouldn't be too far behind. It should be right about the same timetable.
Right. So the Giants will open up the second half. We'll flip hosts for the Bay Bridge series. They'll be out at the A's. I had asked you earlier if you had any good Mount Davis stories because the A's are taking off the tarps for their Saturday game against the Giants. Henry's response was no. we're going to send Scott Osler. This is actually an interesting side note. We're going to send Scott Osler up to Mount Davis on Saturday to write about the experience there. And Scott, when I asked Scott to do this, he's like, sure, but I can't go too high up. I have a fear of heights. And he legitimately has a fear of heights.
And he should take one of the Chronicles supplied oxygen tanks up there.
Right. But in terms of, let's do some general baseball stadium talk. Where would the Coliseum rank for Henry Schulman's tour of stadiums that you've been to?
Just on this planet, or are we including hell? Listen, I want to say something about the Oakland Coliseum. Okay, it's a dump. I mean, it's a dump. It needs to be replaced. It's not a great place to watch baseball. They destroyed it when they built Mount Davis and all that. But I have some fond memories of the Coliseum. We were just talking about this out in the office. I came to the Bay Area in 1979 to go to school at Cal. And with Cal, you could just hop on the BART and go down to the A. And even though I grew up a National League fan, I saw a lot of A's games there, and people who were very close to me were A's fans, and I went to a lot of games there. I covered a lot of A's early on in my career as a sort of a backup writer, and you're never going to get me to say that it's a terrible, 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 terrible place. But right now, in 18? I can't get the month right, but I can get the year right. In 2018 now, It is probably that in Tampa are the worst stadiums, and that's why those are the two that baseball is committed to replacing.
Yeah, they're antiquated for, and it's always stunned me the lifespan of a stadium. Now it's just so small.
It's crazy. I mean, Wrigley Field is over 100 years old. It's been rebuilt. It's been remodeled a few times, but you have stadiums like Atlanta that lasted 20 years. 20 years they played in. The Olympic Stadium, and then they moved out to the burbs.
Yeah. So you're headed up to Seattle. Beautiful ballpark.
Yeah.
Safeco. Is it still called Safeco?
It's still called Safeco. The funny thing about that is the ballpark in Seattle is built alongside the football stadium. And the funny thing to me was that they put a dome over the baseball stadium for the summer, but there's no dome over the, there's no enclosure
there's no
for the football
roof,
stadium.
Yes.
Right. So when it's December and there's ice coming down in Seattle, you just got to grin and bear it. And in the summer, you know, if there's a couple of drops, they can put that kind of umbrella roof over there. And I love the fact, actually, there's a train tracks right behind right field at Safeco Field in Seattle. And it's pretty cool because just in the middle of the game, the train can just go right under the, you know, the sort of the extension of the roof, and you know, the engineer pulls the horn, and it wakes everybody up during a boring game. But I love Seattle; it's a beautiful ballpark.
Yeah, so I spent a year up there working at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, it was the same joke because they had, I think, just opened the, which one was first? The two baseball stadiums. Just opened maybe CenturyLink, I think. So I keep on having to pause because all these sponsorships of these arenas keep changing, so I don't know what they're still called anymore.
The Seahawks played for a couple of years at the UW Stadium while they were building it. So the baseball stadium came first.
Yeah, but I think they just opened the football stadium, and that was the joke. There's not a roof on here, but there is for the baseball.
So you were the 12th man.
Yeah, exactly.
You were the 12th man.
Seattle, I was just asking you this earlier, Henry Schulman's tips for Seattle, or have you,
go? I will give you some tips. If you're staying on the area of 6th Avenue where there are a lot of hotels, be ready to bring some climbing shoes when you go down to the waterfront and back.
Hey, we're talking to a San Francisco audience
here. It's really steep.
Hills, great.
Pioneer Square is where you go for a post-game drink. There's lots of pubs and things like that. And of course, one of my favorite restaurants anywhere in the country is Wild Ginger, which is an Asian fusion restaurant.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I have reservations. Okay. I have reservations for Wild Ginger when we're there, and it's a great Asian fusion type place, and that's a must go in terms, as far as I'm concerned. If you can rent a car on a really nice day, this is the other thing, and it's a really nice day this time of year, and you want to drive around Puget Sound, it's beautiful. You could drive on the sort of west side of the Sound. You take a ferry to, I believe it's Bainbridge Island, and then there are some bridges, and you can drive around to a little town called Gig Harbor, and it stays out. It's light so late there because they're so far north. It's really a beautiful thing to do. I'm not going to have time to do it this time, but I really enjoy it. And if you want coffee, you might be able to find it there.
Just a few
up
places.
In Seattle.
Yeah, I'll add to your list. If you are in a car, West Seattle is, I think,
yes,
kind of a hidden gem.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who knew we'd be talking Seattle on our San Francisco Giants double play podcast?
Well, a lot of people, I think a lot of fans are going to go up there.
I think that would be a great opportunity. Yeah. And like you said, it's been 3 years since the
Giants
have
been
up there.
It's been 3 years since they've been up.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, we are going to catch up with you next, hopefully on the return trip from Seattle.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you what you had at Wild Ginger. I'm very excited that it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you next time, Henry.
All right.
This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Horns of Jericho by Lucas Pern and Miloslav Kolar, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. This show is produced by me and Fernando Diaz. For more Giants coverage, you can follow Henry on Twitter at Hank Schulman and me at Janie_Who. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com.